This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 55. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. We also have our usual chat with Manu Gesindan. And we also have a chat with Andre Ferreira, who works with the Northwest Cricket Association in South Africa. Well, David, believe it or not, we had our second loss for the season this week, and we lost within a day in a two-day game.
Oh no,
what happened? Ask me what happened, David.
What happened, Kevin?
Well, we went into the game with probably our strongest batting lineup ever, and we were hyping it up big time before the game, saying, oh, because we had all our strongest batters in the team. Our bowling wasn't as strong, but we thought, because we have our batting in a small ground, we should be able to get a really nice total for our bowlers to bowl to.
Sure.
But in the end, it didn't work out that way. We got bowled out for 125. And only two of our players sort of made big scores. One of our openers made 60, and another number six batsman got 42. So in the end, it was two players that got 102, and the rest of us got out for 23, basically, which was pretty shocking.
So what happened? What caused that?
I think we just... I mean, they said the ball was swinging, but if you looked at it, everyone played stupid shots. None of us really put our head down and sort of wanted to work for their runs, but...
Oh, no.
Everyone, I think... We spoke about complacency last week, but everyone just thought they can get a 50 by swinging their bats. And in the end, the two players that dug in and played the best got the highest runs. And it was disappointing, but I'm sure we'll learn from it. And we didn't bowl too bad as well. We bowled them out already for 145, so they're about 20 runs ahead. So we can still win. We can still get second innings points from here, but to lose within a day is pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, but you did manage to bowl them out for not many more. So that says that it can't have been that easy to bat if both teams get bowled out for a low score.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't perfect batting conditions, but if you the teams that usually played the team that we played usually doesn't do as well at their home ground as they do at other grounds, and they've been losing most of their games at their home ground. So we thought, if there's a game we can win, it's probably here at their home ground. And most of the teams that they played have been putting about 180 to 200 on them. But to get 125 with our strongest batting lineup just says how far behind the pack we really are when we thought we were a bit ahead. So we got heaps of work to do. And hopefully we'll try and get a second innings win with some aggressive play this weekend.
And how did you play?
I went into bat at number 11. Didn't get to face the ball because the guy at the other end got out. And I only bowled four overs and didn't give many away, but it was at that stage where we needed wickets we didn't need to constrain runs, but we needed wickets. So captain took me off and chucked on a spinner and he got a few wickets. So that was sort of a good plan, but I didn't really mind how I went. I mean, I didn't have a great game, but I didn't have a shocker as well. So as long as the team, our team went pretty bad. So that meant I went pretty bad as well.
How was the team atmosphere? Was everybody sort of still working hard for it, or was there a bit of a resigned atmosphere when you didn't get enough runs and you thought, well, that's it now?
We went out aggressive. We were all really hyped up, trying to stop everything, not giving away any singles. But when they were about 50 away with six wickets in hand, everyone sort of resigned. Our heads dropped. You could tell by our body language that it wasn't really good. But then one of our spinners came on and got two quick wickets, and then we sort of hyped up again. A captain pulled us back in and said, we may lose this first innings, but we still have a chance to get 10 points from our second innings. So to try and get them out as quick as possible, not giving them much of a lead, which in the end worked. And in the end, probably if we do win it from here, it's probably thanks to that sort of hyped up speech.
Well, that's good. It's good if a team is doing badly and you can still turn it around. That's a real challenge. So you can definitely take a positive from that.
Yeah.
You had a bad innings. You know, any team can have a bad innings. But then you did do your very best to turn it around. So even though you lost in a day, you've not done that badly, really, have you? I mean, they're not that far ahead. So, I mean, that's a testament to the determination of the team. So hopefully that'll go into next week, and you'll be able to get the rub in the second innings.
Yeah, exactly, Dave. I think what we were most disappointed with was our complacency. I think everyone saw it in the end as well, that we went in thinking that, as I said, we have a strong batting lineup that we should sort of win this with a canter, but we didn't in the end. So I think from our last game, we did think about complacency, but it really hit us hard this game.
Oh well, good luck. Keep us posted. We'll listen with interest for next week to find out what happens. I've had some
Yes.
news through this week. ECB Coaches Association have sent me details of their national conference, and it looks quite
Nice.
good. It's called Character, Captaincy, and Leadership, and it's a 2-day conference in January, which looks very good. There's some very high profile speakers there, so I'm quite excited about that. Just looking at the list of speakers now, there's probably Andy Flower's probably the big name one. He's doing the last session on the Sunday, but with titles like developing streetwise fast bowlers, building positive character traits in young batsmen, and spirit of cricket, pushing the boundaries, things like that. It all sounds really interesting stuff. So if there's anyone listening who's going along to that, then get in touch. We'll say hello to each other. And what I'm going to try and do is see if we can do any reporting from the conference. I'm not sure what the rules are for doing recordings and things, but if we can get some sort of get some interviews while we're at the conference, then that's going to be quite an interesting time for the podcast.
It's like a kid in a candy store, isn't it, David?
Ah, yeah,
Hope you have
exactly.
fun. Well, we're up to that segment on the show where we pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer. And Gary Palmer is a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's have a look to what Gary Palmer has to say for us this week.
Hi Gary, welcome back.
Hi Dave.
This week we have a question from an 11-year-old right-handed batsman, and he says he has some trouble batting against fast left-arm bowlers coming over the wicket. He says that he's got two problems. One is that his pad always gets in the way of his bat, and second that he's scared of the ball bouncing up and hitting him. Any tips?
That's classic, okay? Most school kids and adults, for that matter, don't like the left arm over because they forget to realign themselves. Right arm over to a right-handed batsman, we all generally know how to stand. Left arm over, batsmen and women tend to stay the same. But what you should, it's all about angles. So what you should do is open your stance and your shoulder slightly so you're looking to play the ball back up to where it came from. Now, this particular young lad, I would imagine, stands very sideways. Bat goes up over middle and leg, and of course, because of the angle of the bowler now, it needs to be more off stump, first slip to get at the ball. And if you think about the bat being on the line of the ball for as long as possible, if you open up and line yourself up, that will happen. But it's just a classic mistake. Stay too sideways, put your foot straight. You always play around your front pad. You're vulnerable to being out LBW and bowled. You can't hit the ball through mid-on, so that's a free area. Now, if you are going to hit it through mid-on, it's going to come from outside off stump, a bit like Pearson does. Chances are you're going to hit across it to mid-wicket and square leg, which is okay on a flat wicket when the ball's not doing much, but against a decent bowler when it's doing a bit, very, very high risk. And the reason that young lad probably doesn't like it when it gets a bit quicker, again, because of that sideways stance, when he goes back, he's slightly closed off again, and there's a blind spot sort of to the left of his ear. And he's too sideways, his hands are behind himself, and he probably finds it very hard to get at the ball. So he thinks, oh, I'm going to get hit, I'm not comfortable. Now, he may feel like he's scared, but you can sort of improve on being scared and become more courageous by, A, improving your body position. So everything's feels a lot easier, and you think, okay, I've got my ribs now, I can actually get my hands at the ball. So, hey, that's not too bad. And the other thing you probably need to do is just practice. Practice some balls coming up at his chest with an underarm feed from about 4 metres away with a tennis ball. And just familiarise himself with the position of the ball coming in at his body, and then learn to try and duck and weave a few. Practice it. It can be a fun exercise with a tennis ball. And then you'll probably realise, actually, I've got out of the way of all of those. I've hardly been hit once. And then all you need to do from there on in is to work on his reactions. So then you may throw the ball quicker. You may, or you could hit it with a tennis racket, do a tennis racket feed, which you can get up quite a lot of speed on the ball if you do that. But obviously, make sure you're wearing a helmet and you've got all your kit on. That's what I would suggest.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. If you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Well, we have another part of our interview with Manu Gazandam this week. Now, Manu authored an ebook that consists of 120 pages of the tips and tricks for spinners. And if you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. So go to www.pitchvision.com/academy to grab a copy. Let's have a listen to what Manu has to say for us this week.
How important is it for a spinner to have variations?
I think very important. You can get away with just a good stock ball at lower club level cricket, but the smarter the batsman is, the smaller the bowler has to get. So if you're playing the higher level cricket you get, the smarter the batsman gets, the more you've got to do to take them on. I mean, if you look at Shane Warne, he's got his flippers, or Saqlain Mushtaq and Saj Ajmal, they have the Dusras. Harbhajan Singh is a great top spinner. Shahid Afridi has an incredible faster ball, and lately he's a really good example of a bowler that's developed. Young players will do well to study Shahid Afridi as a bowler because he mixes up a lot of variations at the moment. And that all works well. And if you have a good stock ball, the variations would be so much more effective because you may be tying down a batsman with your stock ball and then throwing a variation. It doesn't seem like a desperate ploy you're trying. It seems like a genuine attacking option you have. So I would definitely recommend, if you want to become a good spin bowler, is to develop those variations. It's not that hard. If you just apply yourself to it, you can really develop a repertoire of different deliveries.
And when it comes to variations, less is more. It's not something you should be bowling, you know, a flipper, then a googly, then a leg break, and then a big leg break, and mixing up every ball. You keep it set aside until the right time. Is that right?
Yes and no, but mostly yes. You're quite right and said don't bowl a googly and then a stock ball and then a top spinner and then a flipper. You won't find rhythm away as a bowler, and it actually seems like a bit of a desperate ploy to the batsman because you don't know what you want to bowl. So I would say reserve that until it's right, but sometimes it would be right to say bowl a lot of a variation delivery at the same time. I've personally seen Shane Warne bowl 4 googlies in a row, and I remember distinctly seeing Harbhajan Singh bowl 8 Dusras in a row to Matthew Hayden in a test in India, eventually bowling him with the 8th Dusra, which spun more than the others. It was quite weird and quite interesting to see a bowler do that. It's not something I would really recommend because that's the top guys that do that, but that just shows you don't be afraid to do something different, but do have a plan when you do that. Harbhajan Singh bowled at 8 Dusras because there was a big rough patch outside off, and he was trying to pitch it in and actually spin the ball into the left-handed Matthew Hayden. And so he had a plan with it. He didn't just bowl it out of desperation. There's nothing strange or unique about the pitch or the batsman, I'd say reserve those variations, bowl the stock delivery, try to put pressure on the batsman, and as soon as you see he's getting this pressure on him, then try and throw your variation deliveries.
Is there any difference between bowling to top order batsmen and bowling to tail end batsmen?
No, not really. It's more of a mental thing. When you bowl, like you're bowling to a tail ender, you're thinking this should be easy, it should be over quick, and you relax, and you might not bowl as intensely as you did to the top order batsman. What happens then is the tail ender might take a few swings, might connect you, and then things go wrong from there. You're not expecting it. There's no real difference to how you plan bowling to a tail ender or a top order batsman. My advice would actually be don't focus on it being a tail end batsman or a top end batsman. Just focus on the batsman and what shots he's good at and what shots he's bad at, and plan your deliveries accordingly. If the batsman is bad outside off stump, then bowl it outside off stump. If you think he's struggling on his legs, then bowl it on his legs. But don't worry about whether he's number 9 or 11 or number 1. We've all seen what can happen if you relax. You've got teams on the rope for 100 for 8, and the last two batsmen come in and start smacking a few balls around because the bowlers are relaxing. It's more of a mental thing than a technical thing. So just plan the same as you would with a top order batsman.
So it's important, you'd say, for a spinner to be able to read a batsman quickly and sort of work out where his technical weaknesses are.
Yes, and that takes us back to planning 12 balls. Use those 12 balls when a new batsman comes in and try different speed variations and different line and lengths. I mean, I'm saying bowl a short ball. I'm just saying maybe bowl a bit wider, bowl on his legs. See what happens. Maybe you bowl on his legs and he plays it really well for a 4. That's okay. That's part of being a spin bowler. You've got to see where he's good at or not. Like I say, you might bowling his legs and then you find he struggles with it. So use 12 balls. See where you think he's good at or where he's bad at. Read him quickly and then attack him accordingly.
Thank you, Mano, for your time. So if you want the most comprehensive and perfect guide to spin bowling out there, please visit www.pitchvision.com/academy to grab a copy. Now this week we have a new segment. We're going to interview Andra Ferreira with the Northwest Cricket Association, who's putting on the International Cricket Camp in Potchefstroom. And this training camp is going to be in Soons Park from the 28th of November to the 3rd of December. It's going to be for all cricket coaches and cricketers of all levels, from school players to first class level out there. So let's have a listen to what Andra has to say for us about this International Cricket Camp and give us a few details about it.
Hi, Andra. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David.
You're putting on a big event starting on the 28th of November, the International Cricket Camp. What's going on?
Yeah, this is actually the third time we're hosting it in Potch, and we're looking forward to, you know, getting a lot of players from all over the world coming to Potch. We've got cricket players coming from America and the UK, from Namibia, and then, of course, South Africa, coming to attend the international camp. And, you know, amongst them, we've got wicketkeepers, we've got bowlers, we've got keen batsmen. So we're looking forward to, you know, really catering for everybody.
And there's several different camps occurring over the time, aren't there? How does that split up?
Yeah, we've got two school camps, which is basically just for our local guys, you know, catering for players between the ages of 6 and 15. Mm. Then we've got the professional camp, which is for our keen players that have done quite a bit of cricketing in their life, and they we're only looking for players 16 years and up that can hold their weight against first-class players. Then of course we've got the amateur camp, which is for players 15 years and older that haven't actually played big cricket but are keen to learn. And then we've got a coaches conference for coaches that stretches over 2 days. We've got our country's top coaches coming in and helping these guys become better coaches.
What kind of coaching can somebody expect if they're coming, say, to the school camp or the you know, the amateur camp? What kind of coaching can they expect?
Well, they can expect, firstly, I can say they can expect first-class coaching. We aim to get coaches that have international experience. We've got, for instance, Andrew Hall and Dion Craze coming in to coach guys that have played nationally and internationally with quite good records. Then, of course, we aim to, especially the pro camp, which is the crown of the whole camp, we aim to give them something that can tend to every aspect of their cricketing lifestyle. We're looking at sports nutrition down to sports psychology. They've got intense net sessions, fielding sessions. So they will basically get everything.
And how long does each camp last?
Well, the professional camp is the longest camp. It's over 5 days from the 30th of November to the 4th of December. Then we've got the amateur camp, which is 3 days from the 2nd of December to the 4th of December. Coaches conference, as I said, 2 days, and then each of the school camps also 2 days.
Tell us a bit more about the coaches conference. What kind of people are going to be attending that, and what kind of things can they hear?
We've got coaches of all levels, stretching from primary school down up to high school and amateur coaches. And basically, what's going to be happening there is they're going to sit in lectures that from top coaches like Corrie van Sail, who has just won the Hong Kong Sixes tournament for South Africa, telling them what they found worked with players. And then, of course, we're going to have practical demonstrations from the Pitch Vision guys coming to visit us, as well as practical demonstrations from coaches like Kevin Curran, who is the Zimbabwe national coach.
So, if there's any coaches, players who are interested in attending, how can they get in touch with you to get the information?
I think the best would be to send me an email, which I'll give the email address to you guys. You can just pop it in there, somewhere where they can get it. Send me an email, let me know you're interested. We've got a few spaces for most of the camps left, but it is running out because this camp has become so popular that we can't keep up with demand. We're actually looking at introducing a second camp during June next year.
So there's probably some coaches listening who are quite jealous of putting something like that on themselves. If you were to give a couple of tips to people who are thinking about doing something maybe on a smaller scale, some kind of camp in their own backyard, what advice would you give to someone thinking about that?
Well, the first advice I would give them is to, get sponsors and get guys that believe in what you're doing. Secondly, put together a coaching team that people would want to get coaching from. Get big names in there. We've got great knowledges in cricket all over the world. And get these coaches that you're getting to buy into your idea as well. Furthermore, logistics have got to be sorted, and get a great venue, because I think that's one of our strongest pools is the great venue that we've got at Simbi Park and Potch.
Thanks, Andra, for your time. If you want to find out more about the camp, please email Andra at andraf@cricket.co.za. That's andraf@cricket.co.za. We're not going to be having a question section this week, but we still want your questions for next week and for the next cricket show. So if you have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Well, that's all we have time for today. You can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. And the site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. Stay tuned for our next show on the 20th of November. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So this is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.